Hi everybody, it's Emily here from the Willow Pod, and today I'm talking to Rhiannon Bragg. Hi Rhiannon.
Hi Emily, it's great to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming along. Now, some of you might be thinking, oh, I recognise that name. Rhiannon has been in the press a lot. She was a victim of rural domestic abuse, but no longer, Rhiannon.
No, I think what's really important for people to know is that I was an ignorant victim of rural domestic abuse. I didn't know I was in an abusive relationship. And so a lot of the challenges that I met through living rurally, I only became really aware of them after the relationship had ended and when I could see how they'd affected things.
Like so many people, not realising that you're a victim. So we're going to talk about our film The Willows and how realistic you think it is, having been in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. So when you first watched the film, what were your thoughts?
If I'm being honest, it made me cry.
Oh.
It was, and thank you so much for making the film. It was incredibly emotive. For me watching it, it was just a series of red flags about domestic abuse and rurality. It really was one after another after another. And I wondered whether if someone who hadn't experienced what I'd experienced watched it, whether they'd see them, whether they'd be aware of what those red flags actually are and what to look out for.
Well, as I think you know, we use the film in our training, and quite often people say how, as you say, how emotive they find the film. We don't always have people picking up on all the little nuances, but I know that people find it.
If people pick up on what they recognise. So
Yes. There
may be, because domestic abuse is so complicated, there are so many different forms of abuse, so many different aspects that may be used against the victim, that actually there may be some that are recognised by some people, but others, because they haven't crossed their radar yet, they're not aware of. Which is why having what you've done as a training video is so brilliant, because they open the eyes of everybody as to what these issues are, first part in beginning to address them.
Just like you've said, you know, it will affect some people in one way and others in another way. The first time I watched it, I'd read the script, I'd been involved with it, and I was fine. I knew what was coming. But when Peter acted the part where Dawn had said she was pregnant and he sat there and he waited and he does this thing where he rubs his fingers. And that, for me, that was my heart and mouth moment.
Yeah.
Where
you're waiting. It's the anticipation.
Yes.
You're not sure. And this is so much part of abuse. And in fact, I was sort of jotting down a few things, thinking, okay, what stuck with me? And it's the suspense. Experiencing what I've experienced and watching that film, it was the suspense throughout the entire thing. It's not a pretty... Darby, she looks beautiful, but it's not a pretty film about a couple not getting on brilliantly, what have you. For me, it's an absolute suspense, because as you see the situation build, as you see the red flags, you think, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? You know, you can see this is an incredibly abusive situation, and that Dawn is constantly on eggshells, constantly. And that pause you talk about is that waiting, because you're not sure what's going to happen when. You know something's going to happen, but you don't know what, when. And it's for anxiety, it's an absolute killer.
It is. It's not something you can watch again and again, although I do have to with the training, and it never loses its impact. So I'm guessing from what you've said, you think that it's quite realistic then.
I think it's incredibly realistic. I go as far as that, it's disturbingly so. Disturbingly so. And I think it'd be interesting to play it to different audiences, whether it's people who are aware of domestic abuse, whether it's people who, thank goodness, aren't aware of it, and just to see what they got from it, what they see, how aware are people of these issues. But incredibly realistic, disturbingly realistic.
Yeah. As well as using it in our training, we have shown it to one or two women's groups, and we have also shown it to some young farmers as well. And they said that they didn't realise how realistic it was until they saw it on a bigger screen. They said they'd heard those phrases, they'd seen those things, but never realized that that was actually abuse until it was there in front of them, so to speak.
I think that's a really valid point, is that some of it is, particularly rurally, it's addressing behaviors which for some people are incredibly established and they don't see as wrong.
Exactly, yes. Which is hard to explain to people who don't come from a rural background, isn't it, I find? Because it's hard to explain, for me, it's the give me a boy next time.
Yeah, the control and the underlying threat.
Yes.
It's the underlying threat. If you don't get it right, what the consequences will be.
We've got all sorts of control on what sex an unborn child might be.
But nevertheless, it's there, that threat of if it's not a boy, then the woman has done wrong and he won't be happy and the consequences.
Yeah. And whilst you're talking about the threat, you picked up whilst we were just chatting before the gun in the corner. So
for me, I'm not anti-shooting. Shooting is very much part of rural life. It's something, you know, my perpetrator and I used to shoot together. And it was, if anyone's familiar with my situation, I was held at gunpoint overnight. It was misuse of the weapon by a licensed firearms holder. You know, it was a licensed weapon that he used that night that he's currently serving sentences for. And so for me, as soon as Peter went to the door and picked up the shotgun, uncovered, it wasn't locked up, it wasn't in a cabinet, it wasn't kept correctly, it's just that massive trigger of the knowledge that, yes, he's got weapons and the fact that he has chosen not to keep them properly. He's chosen not to comply with the firearms or shotgun licensing regulations, that he's already happy to not adhere to authority. And then where that leads to. So for me, seeing that, it was a massive threat to Dawn, a massive statement of I'm in control and I've got access.
Access to those. And it doesn't need to be pointed at a person to feel threatened by it, does it? It was
absolutely
there in the corner of the room.
In many ways, it doesn't even need to be kept incorrectly. Just the knowledge that someone who is abusive has access to weapons is in itself a threat. It's some of the work that I've been doing over the last 18 months, in fact, is on a project which tightens firearms licensing procedures and will help the professionals involved to uncover, to help them uncover if there's abuse there.
I think you're going to come back and talk to us about that project in the future, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Where things are at the moment is it's been presented to the organisations nationally. And when we've had the official press launch, then I'd love to come back and explain more.
Brilliant, brilliant. So, yes, I know I also grew up, I always say to people, grew up shooting tin cans at the bottom of my granddad's garden with an air rifle. And my children have shot air rifles. You'd be a lot more concerned if there was a shotgun in the middle of Derby City Centre than in a rural setting.
Again, and it's what people aren't used to. So, you know, you'd hear being said, oh, well, we used to just walk around with them slung over a shoulder or cocked over arm, you know. So what's wrong with that? Well, actually, that is wrong.
Yeah.
And things have changed and have moved on. And you're quite right. If someone saw, I think, probably any sort of gun in a city centre, there'd be a massively different reaction. So part of what you're doing and what needs to happen is educating the rural community that actually, yeah, weapons are perfectly acceptable when they are legally kept and used
in the right way.
Appropriate manner. And I don't have any issue with, as I said, with shooting in its sort of appropriate forms, but I do have issue where it's not done properly and where the rules and regulations that are in place are not adhered to and broken. It's a significant factor in the threat to people who are undergoing abuse in rural areas.
Absolutely. Another thing I wanted to ask you about in the film, a lot of people, right at the very beginning, we hear Peter say to Hattie, you've got to help me with the lambs later.
Oh, God, yeah. I've noted about that. And again, you know, when you see the film, you see the child's reaction, and it's mentioned more than once. And I thought, here's a guy, he's now going on controlling his daughter. Mm-hmm. It's not a case of, okay, you're school age and there's work to be done or this or that. And then mother, in fact, brings it up at school because the child's falling asleep at school. So there were lots of factors in there for me. One of them is, and this is horrifically recently only come in as a legal consideration, children within the household are victims as well. They don't have to witness violence or witness the what might be heard or said or the effects. Just living in that household, they are victims. But it seems very much in this case, he's very happy to not consider the child's welfare, not prioritise homework, sleep, by abusing the mother. And essentially, and this is what I experienced, if not removing the mother as far as being able to care for the children, definitely having a significant negative effect on how well she will be able to care for the children whilst she is being abused.
How effectively she can mother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for me, I consider my children were essentially motherless for years. It's awful.
What about the meeting room, the meeting scene where they're in the church hall or the village hall or wherever
they are?
You know,
one of, for me, this all ties into, well, there's a number of facts in that particular scene, but part of it is the isolation and my desperation for Dawn to have the strength and the opportunities to say something to someone while seeing that her only opportunity seemed to be when she was doing the school run, that couple of minutes she was allowed out of the car when friends were trying to reach out to her and she was constantly under pressure, looking over her shoulder to have to get back in the car. And, she, you know, when we heard Peter say she'd been too long, what was she doing? Why was she talking to that man? All the accusations. Like, and then in the meeting room scene, it's just that constant feeling that whenever he's there, everything's being monitored. Whenever he's there, she's on eggshells. She knows she can't say anything. When matters are raised in the kitchen between her and her friend, she's so, for me, blatantly conscious of how at risk she is. Yeah. You know, it's back to that threat of, I can't say the wrong thing. I can't do the wrong thing. I daren't risk it. And, you know, when we've seen it refers to, you know, I think it's cricket that they play together. It's a police officer. So he's got flagged up someone who they obviously know socially, but is also a member of authority locally. And actually, it's just being reiterated that Peter is mates with him. So how confident is Dawn going to feel reaching out to this guy? If he's, will she be believed? Will it be dismissed if she's reaching out to someone who she feels may side with their friend? As it is later on in the film, it's a different side is shown.
I don't know if you picked up, sometimes people don't, but Becky, the lady that is wearing a hat at the school run, is married to the policeman. So
yes,
so Dawn can't even disclose to a friend because she might then speak to her husband who's then friends with Peter. So there's just no way out.
And even things like, you know, her perceived clumsiness with the plate of biscuits or cakes and being put down, constantly being worn down in front of other people when, quite frankly, living as she is in this hyper-abusive situation when you're on your nerves the whole time, when your anxiety is sky high, your sleep will be affected, everything, overtired, whatever, it's not surprising that you have a small accident with a plate.
I think that's blowing our own trumpet here a little bit, but I think that's one of the things that the film does brilliantly is it shows the coercion and the control. Because how do you explain to the police, well, it's the things he said. He tells me to get in the car, but it's the way he says it. He made a comment about my baby weight, but it's the way he said it. He says I'm clumsy, but it's the...
There's too much that can be dismissed. And for me, education, and this is education of the police as well, massively about these issues, is absolutely key. Because, and it's looking at the whole picture. If you look at the different incidences separately, you can see how someone who is ignorant of the issues would dismiss them all. Well, he's only said that. I mean, how bad is that really?
Yeah.
How bad? It's a bit of baby weight. Does it really mean anything?
Yeah.
So he's made a comment about her being a bit clumsy in front of other people. What does that really mean? But when you look at the whole picture, when you stand back and look at the whole thing and consider the effect upon the person it's being aimed at, Well, that's pretty significant.
It is. It is. I'm really glad that the things you're saying to me are the things I say in the training. So I'm obviously getting it right. I mean, that's something. So I was actually talking to someone the other day from a professional organisation, not a domestic abuse, but a crime related organisation. And she was saying, oh, well, someone always knows that there's domestic abuse happening. And I said, hold on a minute. Having been a victim myself in a rural area, I would disagree with you. I said, you know, in an urban setting, maybe you can get away with it. But in a rural setting, because everybody knows each other, you will do everything in your power to hide it, because you, as we were just saying with the policeman, when you disclose, you don't know who that person knows and who that person's friends are.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's something you just touched on there as far as the rural population and witnesses, and I experienced this massively. In fact, it was by one of his friends thrown in my face, and he knew it. There weren't witnesses to his abuse. He could really quite openly go for me one way or another, the shouting, the screaming, hands at the neck. There was nobody to witness it. And so when it got to sort of any legal consideration, it's one person's word against another's.
Yeah.
And it goes nowhere because he never did it. He didn't do it. And for me, it was only when the CCTV came into it to prove, you know, prove his lies wrong. But you're quite right. And I suppose often as well, for maybe this is more specifically the farming communities, but when, and it's not always, but in most cases, a woman comes into the relationship, and in this case, it's portrayed as being the husband's farm, his father's working on it. She's actually coming into a situation, we don't know how far she's come from. She may not have the established younger friends. She's obviously got some good friends who really care for her, but as you say, are connected to the people in authority. And I really related to her, the awareness of what sort of risk are you taking by flagging up what you're experiencing to someone else, not knowing how they will deal with it, who they may speak to, whether they may dismiss it. So there's quite a bit going there. And of course, the film ends at this point. But for Dawn and the unborn child, quite likely, and potentially the daughter as well, there's the issue that if this is a family farm that's been her home, that's owned by the father, she's probably got no income. She's probably got no house. She's got nowhere to go. So the challenge of actually having the strength to leave, and Dawn may not know yet, but we know support services rurally are much less than they are in an urban environment. She's had a friend offer to put her up for a bit, but actually, where do you go on a permanent factor? How do you, if you're able to make the break and get out of the relationship, which we know is a particularly dangerous time for victims, to be supported on a longer term basis? And this is where I strongly believe victims are really lacking the support, the sustainably funded support services needed to enable them to live safely.
Yes. And like you say, one of the other things we talk about in the training is that when the separation, when, if the separation actually happens, it's not as easy in rural or farming situations to just say, right, I want a divorce, I want half of, you know, I want what I'm entitled to. Because that family farm, as you were saying about our film, if it's his family farm, how many generations has that been in the family? Is it like 5-6 generations worth of farming that if she was to say, I'm leaving, I want what I'm entitled to? It's not just a house, it's a heritage and it's an ancestry and it's her children's heritage. Now, I'm not saying that's right. Yes, she should get what she's entitled to, but that's another barrier when you live rurally, because you're thinking, well, it's been in their family for 500 years.
Absolutely. You know? And in fact, I think one of the aspects I'm believing strongly is we still focus far too much on let's move the victim to safety. Well, actually, why don't we deal with the perpetrator?
Yeah.
We need to move the perpetrator out of the area of offence. We're still in a situation where it may not be expected officially, but that the victims more often than not have to disrupt and leave their support networks, their friends, if they're in employment, their jobs. The children have to move education.
Schools.
So much disruption for the victim when actually we should focus more on the perpetrator. And in fact, one of the things that, and forgive me if it's, in fact, I think she, during the film, she, they have a wedding ring, it's shown in one of the shots. But you also have the complication where, in fact, if they're not married and they're just cohabiting officially, well, then, you know, what, if anything, financially, would she expect?
Would they be entitled to?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe that's another conversation we could have about perpetrators, and is it too late by the time they've got there, or do we need to be looking more at younger people, younger girls and boys, and addressing these behaviours at a younger age? Maybe we can cover that another day.
Oh, absolutely, because I think education is so important. I know it's starting already within schools, which is absolutely key, healthy relationships and recognising issues that, you know, I've shared with you, I wasn't even aware of myself when I was experiencing them. I hadn't got labels to put on the behaviour. I just knew it wasn't right and I didn't like it. And in fact, when it comes to, you know, does this also look at actually with perpetrators, how many of them are accepting to programmes for change? And Nicole Jacobs was speaking about this on BBC Breakfast yesterday. And yes, there are perpetrators as well, but it's also, remember that there are a section of perpetrators who, if they're not accepting of their issues, if that's a very easy way to describe it, are less likely to respond at all to any sort of intervention program. But I think education from a very early age is key, so that everyone's aware, and you hope that it's not just the victim who then is aware of what's happening, but the friends around them, the position of they're more aware, they're able to support appropriately, call out, flag up to whoever may be able to step in. So what you're doing, the film that's being put together, the training that goes with it, I know, and we touched on this a bit, it'll be life-saving. It'll be absolutely life-saving. And what, you know, what cost does society want to put on a life?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's a very low cost, I think, isn't it, that society...
It's awful. And it's the cost to society. So it's not just Dawn. It's Dawn's daughter. It's her unborn baby. It's the effect on those, the education for that girl. You know, we've already seen that being got at by the father's attitude. It's if that then puts the daughter on a back foot, what she's then able to achieve as far as going out into the wider world, exploring, you know, the income, everything. There's such a significant cost to society. I think it's really important that people don't just think about it as this is one person undergoing domestic abuse, but think about it as a pebble being thrown into water and the ripples that go from that. It's absolutely massive.
In recent statistics, I read that it's $66 billion a year domestic abuse costs the UK government.
It's huge. And how many, if you look at, say, women in prison, how many have in some way or form suffered domestic abuse? And if that wasn't happening, how many wouldn't have gone on to end up being in prison? You know, there's so much associated cost with this issue that, I'll be honest, it amazes me that authorities haven't started doing more earlier and aren't investing significant amounts into dealing with an issue that goes across society, across age, across geography, across class, across absolutely everything. The stats are awful, we know that. There really should be more investment in stopping this issue as much as is humanly possible.
Yeah, before it gets to the need for perpetrator programmes.
Absolutely.
Well, it has been amazing. I have to say, I've been a little bit starstruck because I've followed your story for quite some time. So it is really lovely talking to you, Rhiannon.
Well, it's really great talking to you. And I know when we were first in contact, I've always been so impressed by the Willow Project and the starts that you have and the recognition of domestic abuse rurally and what an issue it is and how it has got its unique challenges and how they need to be addressed. So it's an absolute pleasure for me to speak with you. Thank you so much for inviting me to do so.
No, you are more than welcome. We will have you back when we can talk a little bit more about the project around firearms that you're involved in. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we'll get you back again to talk more about what you feel about perpetrator programs then and how you feel, how effective you feel they are.
Great. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making the time to talk to me today, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.